Welcome to the Iced Tea Podcast, the podcast where we spill the tea on figure skating. My name is Megan.
Hi, Megan. I'm Netta. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. This episode is special.
This is a primer on what we do here, how we do it, and what is the point of figure skating.
Yeah, this episode is primarily aimed at like new people. So if you haven't heard our podcast before, we welcome you. We will introduce ourselves. My name is Megan Kelleher. I am Pisces.
Okay, that's it.
That's it. That's all you need to know.
All right. My name is Netta Marie Vojtova, and I'm a Virgo and a little bitch.
So this is the Iced Tea Podcast. We are a fan podcast. We are two people who love figure skating. We're lifelong fans. And we actually met in theater school. We're both like performing arts people. So we tend to focus a lot on the sort of performative side of skating, like how beautiful is it? How does it make me feel? What is the music? What are the costumes? What are the emotions coming from the skaters? Like, we're not as focused on like, did the jump technically go 100% well? Like we do, but we're not experts on it. So if you want super mathy analysis, there are a lot of other amazing people who do that. We're more here to like gossip and chat about it.
And when we say gossip, we mean just discuss the human side of things and not be catty and horrible about it, because there has unfortunately been a history of coverage of our sport which kind of prioritizes drama and cattiness over human stories. And we kind of started this because we believe that at the end of the day, what's important about this sport and any other sport is the humans who make it possible. So we are gonna talk about people and talk about their performances and hopefully have a good time.
Yeah, we aim to be funny and silly here, and we always try to give people the benefit of the doubt. They're doing amazing things that we could never do, and we kind of try to stay the heck away from like internet fandom drama and keep things like level-headed. We also swear a lot, so if you hate swears, this is your off-ramp.
Also, hi, this is a comedy podcast. We're gonna make jokes. It's gonna be fun. Maybe don't listen with your 10-year-old cousin. Might not be the best idea. I'm not saying it's spicy, but
I check a box when I upload this podcast that says explicit. So I hope that if that tells you anything about our skaters. Hey. Hey, we're here to talk about figure skating, and it's something that we love very much. And at this point, we like to think we know an awful lot about. And we wanted to give you a primer on like, what do you actually need to know if you want to watch the sport and kind of know what's going on, but not spend a bajillion years learning things you're never going to need to know for the purposes of the Olympics, right?
If you're afraid of diving into Reddit, this is where you should be so that you can surprise and or impress your partners and loved ones who know figure skating with your sudden knowledge that you've acquired overnight. This is the Spark Notes of figure skating. Hi.
This is actually perfect. We're not associated with Spark Notes, but
this is the glitter papers of figure skating.
Yeah. The last thing I want to say is that everything we say is pretty much just our opinion. I think in general, we have opinions that line up with like a large swath of the fandom community. We're not generally the only people who have our opinions, but that doesn't mean everyone agrees. And if you don't agree, that's totally fine. And that's chill. The world is full of people who disagree, and that's cool.
Yeah, as long as you're cool about it and remember that this is all in jest and it's all sport and it's all fun, please be kind and enjoy. Last thing I'm going to say is that no one's paying us. We're not in any federation's pocket, and we're not invited to support someone more than someone else for any sort of capitalist gain. So take that as you will. And having said all of that, let's talk about a sport that we all like so much.
This is our first question. We structured this as sort of a question and answer, a sort of a Socratic dialogue, because I know I know all of you were like, I don't know about sports, but I love classical philosophy. So
I mean, yeah.
You fucking nerds. Welcome to sports. The first question is figure skating a sport?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's at the Olympics, bro.
First of all, it's in the Olympics. Also, it's competitive. Medals get won. People do incredible athletic feats of strength and stamina and just impossible things. It's also very much an art form.
It's both. Like, it can be both. I know. I just dropped a truth bomb.
Wow. You spilled the tea about figure skating.
You'll hear it described as like an artistic sport or an aesthetic sport. It's not the only one of these sports. We have gymnastics. We have like synchronized swimming, like diving to a certain extent.
Synchronized swimming is actually renamed now as of the last Summer Olympics. And now it's artistic swimming, I believe. Because
I didn't even know that.
They realized that they're not always fully in sync. And they were like, this makes no sense. And now it's just like artistic swimming or something. But yes, very much. The same vibe of impossible in what people do with their bodies, but it also tells a story and invokes an emotional response and is pretty to behold.
It's also so hard. Even if you've like put on rental skates and skated around your local park or whatever, I would recommend before you say, oh, it's not a sport, like take a couple lessons, because the actual stuff you do in like formal figure skating lessons, even at the most basic level, like your butt is going to be sore forever.
And your arms, surprisingly.
Yeah, I was literally just going to say, like, I mean, whatever, I'm in terrible shape, but like holding your arms out, like just try T-posing for like half an hour. Your arms are going to hurt, and you got to do that while doing other crazy stuff for like a whole lesson for an hour.
Yes. So skating is about T-posing and making art.
Yeah. Like all the good things in the world.
Of course, naturally. So Megan, when we go to the Olympics to see art and sport, what is the structure of the events? What are programs? Why are we, how does it happen?
Okay, yes, you will hear the short program and the free skate, which used to be called the long program until fairly recently. So people a lot of the time still call it the long program. Before, actually, you know what I should say before I get into this? We only cover singles on this show. There are four disciplines, they're called, in competitive skating. Really kind of five if you count synchro.
Which you should, because it's amazing.
Which you should. I do think synchro should be in the Olympics, but that's a whole other thing. There's men's singles, women's singles, pairs, and ice dance. And yes, we don't cover pairs and ice dance. And it kind of started out as us just like being more interested in singles. And then eventually it became like we just don't have the time to...
We're deeply verbose.
Yeah, and the rules are different enough that it would require us to like really learn a lot of new stuff. So someday maybe, but for now we just talk about singles. So everything we say only applies to single skating.
And single skating is when there's one person on the ice doing a thing by themselves.
That's true. It doesn't necessarily mean they're single, so don't assume.
Do not ship. They are married.
You could get in a situation where you're like, ooh, single skating? Michal Brzina of Czech Republic, here I come. No, he's married and has a beautiful daughter.
Hot singles in your area?
Yeah, not the same. So hot singles in your area skate two programs. They skate them on different days. The short program comes first always. The short program is shorter in time, hence the name. It is 2 minutes and 40 seconds. And compared to the long program, which is 4 minutes, the main difference aside from the length is that the rules are tighter in a way. There's like a really specific list of things you have to do in it. And there's not a lot of room for error, and you don't get a lot of partial credit. The free skate is more like you have a lot of wiggle room and what kind of skating you do, what kind of jumps you put in.
There is still a checklist for the free skate, but if you make a mistake and you're quick enough and you can think on your feet, you can kind of make up for things as you go. Whereas in the short program, you're only getting one attempt at everything, basically.
Yeah, you get a fair amount of partial credit in the free. Like, they really want to give you as much credit as possible. And then at the end of the free skate, they add up both scores, and that is your total score.
Also, some people only get to skate their short program.
Yeah, at these huge international events like the World Championships and the Olympics, it's kind of also a heat in a way to like see who gets to make it, because there's just not enough time for everyone to do a long, just because they're long.
So if you're listening to this in preparation to watch the short and the free at the Olympics, get your favorite snacks in a lot of them.
Now, Netta, between the two of us, you are much more accomplished as a skater. And so I would love it if you would explain skates to me. Talk to me about the equipment.
Oh, the boots themselves? Well, figure skaters at the elite level, which I'm not, I'm an adult beginner, but figure skates are very special and they're very different from what you're going to get if you just go to a park or your local rink and get rentals. On an elite level, basically everyone you see is skating in boots that are customized to their special, amazing, talented feet. They're heat molded. They get like all sorts of like very special skating. There is a brand which literally 3D prints people's feet and then builds the boot around every single person's specific anatomy. The blades are also just designed and engineered and like super modern and lightweight and perfect for jumps and spins and all of that. If you place a blade, just like the figure skating blade, on a surface, it's not just gonna all touch said surface
because it's not totally flat.
Yeah, it has a slight curve which enables people to be able to spin and take off for jumps and all of that. So all of that is extremely expensive, and it's one of the reasons why the sport is not as accessible as it could be, because just physically to maintain those things costs money. And for most people, if you're a casual skater, you usually get a pair of skates and just have them and bust them out every winter and own them for the rest of your life. Competitive elite figure skaters go through several pairs a year. It's an investment. It's also the kind of thing where sometimes you hear that, like, for example, someone's skates didn't arrive on time because airports are garbage or something like that. And it's never like, well, can they just go to the store and buy a new pair of skates? Because break-in periods are hard and kind of painful. If you've ever broken in a pair of combat boots, imagine that but with knives.
Yeah, if you've never like held in your hands or touched like an elite level figure skate, first of all, they cost like at least like $900. It's fucking insane.
Bare minimum, yes.
Bare minimum. And second of all, like, you kind of would not believe how hard they are. Like, they feel like they're made out of metal or wood and not leather. Like, they're so hard. And they have to be, because if you're landing on 1 foot from the air going very fast and jumping from very high, like, you need a really hard, firm support around your ankle or else your fucking bones would shatter.
Yeah, ankle support is very, very important. And finding the sweet spot between being comfortable in your boots but also, like, having the support makes it impossible for someone to just bust out a brand new pair of skates and skate in them, which you might know if you've seen the Disney film Ice Princess, where it's actually a plot point that she gets like lied to, and then they're like, oh my god, you should get new skates, it's gonna be so good for you, and then they buy her the new skates right before a competition as like a sabotage tactic. So even Disney knows that you can't skate in new skates. So it's very, very important when you see skaters on an international stage skate, just bear in mind that their equipment is very custom and very expensive and very, very special. And if something breaks or goes wrong during the event, that's like a big, big deal.
Yeah, and it's commonly referred to as like boot issues. If you hear anybody say, oh, they've been having boot issues, it's bad. It's like having to like drive someone else's car, but like
in a race.
Like, it's just weird and disorienting.
Or it's like if your own car has like just a weird light on your dashboard and you're not sure what it is, but it's just been going weird. Yeah. And you can't afford a new car and you can't get a new car because you're already on the road. That's kind of what boot issues are. So anyway, I kind of talked about the physicality of what the blades look like, but why do edges matter, actually?
Okay, so you talked about how they're kind of curved. There's also the toe pick, which you would know if you've seen the cutting edge. Toe pick. Yeah, that's the point. That's like the serrated part at the toe, and it's used to kick off for jumps. The thing about ice skates about figure skates that I had a hard time wrapping my head around the first time I learned this is the concept of edges, which you'll hear a lot probably with the commentators talking about it. It's a really important concept in figure skating, and it's based on the fact that a skate blade, if you hold it up and you look straight into it, so that you're facing the bottom of the blade, mm-hmm. you're gonna see that it's not like a knife where it just has one pointy yep. edge. It's like actually like an upside down U, and it has two points of contact with the ice. So it's almost like a single blade that kind of then at the last minute turns into two blades. And it just look up a picture of it. It's sort of hard to describe it. But basically what that means is that if you shift your weight to one side or the other, you're kind of more on one edge than another. And that allows skaters to just do different things, basically. And a really, really high level skater is going to have deep edges. You might hear the commentators say like, oh, deep edges. That's really good. And what it means is that you're essentially just leaning really far. And it means that you have a lot of control and stability, basically, right?
I feel like if you're listening to this right now, I encourage you to just imagine your local rank when there is a bunch of newbies who are just learning how to skate, and then there's someone who's really showing off. You know how the person who's really showing off is always like leaning real fucking far to one side or the other? That's edges. You've witnessed edges. Those are the person's deep edges that they're showing off to a bunch of people to intimidate them at open ice. Yes.
So, Netta, why is figure skating called that?
Well, figure skating, Megan, is called figure skating because back in the early days, in the dawn of figure skating, it was all about drawing figures on the ice. And it's still something that people use when you're learning how to skate, when you're learning different elements. A lot of the reference points that you have about how well you've performed a certain thing is what it looks like on the ice when you're done
with it. So like a figure eight or like a curve or a clover.
Or one of the most basic turns that people do are tree turns, which are called tree turns because when you make it happen on your skate, you leave behind a trace which looks like the number three. Figure skating is a sport which cannot happen in a straight line. Everything happens in curves and in essentially figure eights. A lot of, back in the day, a lot of the exams and competitions featured basically just figures and how well you can conquer those curves. That's no longer a thing. It hasn't been a thing in about 30 years because it's now been replaced with all of the elements that we look for.
Yeah. So we're going to explain to you what the elements are, and we could get so unbelievably complicated granular with the granular is the word of the day. So apologies if you don't like the word granular.
I'm so sorry. I don't know why it's in my head.
We could get very specific and very detailed, and we won't, because this is not about making you an expert on figure skating. This is about giving you enough information to kind of know what's going on when you're watching the Olympics.
Yes.
So elements are anything you do on the ice that gets you points. They ask you to do certain things. You do them. They judge you on them. Those things are elements. They're called elements. And
yes.
The first thing we're going to talk about is the thing that pretty much everybody knows about and associates with skating, and that's the jumps. It's a big part of it. It's not the only part of it. But we'll get into that. A lot of your points are coming from your jumps.
Yes. We're going to talk later about how scores are mathematically kind of made. But to put it the most simply, everything has a price. Everything has like points that you earn about it. And jumps are your most expensive elements. So it's high risk, high reward.
Right. And because they're so points hefty, a lot of figure skating, particularly in the last like 10, 20 years, you'll hear people say, oh, it's changed. It's not the way it used to be. It's all about jumps now and it's not about artistry. And like, that's certainly true in some cases, but the very best skaters, in at least in our opinion and the opinion of like a lot of people, if not necessarily the judges all the time, are the skaters who have the jumps and the artistry. You'll hear people call somebody like, oh, the whole package, or like a well-rounded skater, a complete skater. That means that they've got the jumps, but they have everything else as well.
Conversely, just for a second, it is not to say that people have miraculously become better at figure skating in the past like 30 years. A lot of it is also about the fact that equipment has developed to a point where it's possible for people to even attempt the harder, like more impossible jumps that we're going to talk about. If you watch like the old black and white shaky footage of like earlier Olympics or like older competitions, people just straight up didn't have the ankle support to dream of attempting the things that modern boot building has enabled. And that's like a big part of it as well.
I think this is true of a lot of Olympic sports where,
oh, for sure, yes.
Especially like, I think of like gymnastics. Like if you watch old gymnastics videos, like I don't know a ton about gymnastics from a technical standpoint, but like it used to be like, wow, she did a flip. And now it's like Simone Biles is doing like 700 flips. And it's like, have people evolved? And it's like, well, I think there's an element of, oh, I saw someone else do it and now I'm inspired to try something else. But you're right. It is also just purely like technology.
Yeah, like, if Werner Rittberger, who invented the loop jump, had attempted a quad loop, he would have broken all of his legs.
And he had a lot of them. And a lot of people don't know this about Werner, is that he had many legs. And that's why he was so famous, Megan, in the skating world.
Megan, this is a factual episode. Can you talk to me about the kinds of jumps that exist?
Here's what I'll say. There's 6 types of jump. Do you need to be able to identify them with your naked eye? No, you do not. And you may be like, oh, I wish I did. I could. It takes a while.
I know how all of them work. And sometimes I'm still like, what? Was that a sal? I don't know.
It takes a long time. So basically, the first thing we're going to talk about is rotation. Rotation is, I mean, I don't have to explain to you what rotation is. It's like, it's turning. A rotation in the jump context is like you're turning in the air. So if you say, like, how many rotations does a jump have? That's how many times you're rotating in the air. And that's important because you want to get all the rotations in the air. That's an important part of, like, what's considered good.
And by rotations, we mean, like, going 360.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, your body,
a full circle.
Like, your body spinning. So you'll hear, like, double, triple, quad. I mean, you'll hear single, but that's only if somebody messes up. Low key.
At the Olympics, yeah.
Yeah, if I say a quad Lutz, that's a Lutz jump that had 4 rotations. Quads are going to be like the buzzword. You're going to hear that a lot because the quad is kind of like the golden standard at this point. It's like the highest bar of what you can do. They're worth a lot of points. And pretty much all the guys, not all of them, which we will get to probably more next episode, but most of the guys have at least one quad. And as a result, you kind of not always, but almost always need at least one to be super competitive. And with the women, it's actually also starting to go that way. So while most of the women won't have a quad, probably all of the podium people will have a quad in the women's side.
Yeah.
Women are not allowed to do a quad in the short, which is supposed to sort of equalize the playing field. But again, when we talk about judging, you'll see why that's not really the case. The last thing I want to say about rotations is that the axel is kind of its own special jump because it's the only jump that you take off forwards. And as a result, it has an extra half rotation. And so a triple axel is actually 3.5 rotations. And thus, a triple axel is harder than a triple anything else. It's a totally different technique. And a lot of people are like, would rather do a quad than a triple axel. No one has, like, really, really done a quad axel yet. But Yuzuru Hanyu, the greatest of all time, he attempted one in competition this season and will probably attempt one at the Olympics. And I don't think anyone else is going to attempt one, so you'll see that. But, you know, mostly it's about quads and triple axels.
And the triple axel is, I think, the one that people who are not in the know about figure skating know about. So if you tell people that you skate, they will always be like, oh, can you do a triple axel? And the thing is, very few people or very few women can. So when you watch the Olympics, you're kind of going to notice that basically 99.9% of people jump in the same direction. And that's if I ask you right now to stand up and just rotate around your own axis, you're gonna instinctively have a preferred side. And in the world of figure skating, most people, like literally almost everyone, rotates counterclockwise, so to the left. Basically, there is very few people who just intrinsically want to rotate clockwise. They're morally and emotionally superior. No, I kid because I jump clockwise. Anyway, people mostly rotate counterclockwise because for some insane reason, that's the more instinctual direction that the human brain wants to go with. It used to be one of those things like being left-handed, older, more old school coaches would train people out of that, out of wanting to go clockwise and would train everyone to go the same uniform way. Kind of the way people were, you know, forced to write with their right hand. It really doesn't matter. It's the same thing. It gets judged the same way. It's a matter of personal preference.
So a lot of what we wanted to talk about here is sort of defining terms that are either like official terms or colloquial,
like, just
terms.
Vernacular. Yes.
Yeah, just vernacular that you'll hear. And we wanted to talk about what happens when a jump doesn't go well. We'll talk about falling in a second, but another way a jump can go wrong is if it pops. And so you'll hear like, oh, that they popped their jump. And what that means is that they rotated it fewer times than they intended to.
Yeah, there is many reasons why a pop could happen. Sometimes it's just mental, something in the mind of the athlete is like, this is just not going to happen, and they bail out. Sometimes it's something about the way they took off, which felt weird, and it just doesn't happen. Sometimes it's lack of momentum, like if you didn't go into the jump fast enough, you just don't have the momentum to like actually rotate as many times as you intended. There's many reasons, and sometimes people opt, whether voluntarily or just like on instinct, to pop instead of try to force the jump, because it's more likely that you'll land on your feet. So you kind of save yourself from like falling face first on the ice.
So Netta, what are the six kinds of jumps? What are they called?
There are six different jumps. They're split into two categories. You have toe jumps and you have edge jumps. Toe jumps mean that when you're taking off, you use the toe pick, which is the front of your blade, to kind of tap it into the ice and have that propel you forward. And with edge jumps, you just kind of take your time, like going on whichever edge is the takeoff edge until there's just nowhere to go and you have to like take off into the air and spin. So we have the loop, salchow, and axel, technically, which are your edge jumps. And then you have the toe loop, the flip, and the lutz, which are your toe jumps. They're different because of the different ways they take off. They take off from different edges and have different ways you propel up. But those are, again, I was going to say granular again. Those are like details you don't really, 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 really need to know for the purposes of what we're doing here. Don't worry about it. The one thing that you can learn is that the axel, which is technically, like super technically, an edge jump, is, like Megan said earlier, special because it takes off going forward. So when you're watching with your grandma, you can be like, oh my god, they just did an axel, and she's gonna be super impressed that you knew that. Also, there is a quick thing about the flip and the lutz, which is that they're very, 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 very similar. The only difference is that they take off on different edges, and sometimes you'll hear people kind of criticize some skaters because the lutz has a very difficult to position entry edge, and sometimes people will cheat it a little bit and essentially do a glorified flip and claim it's a lutz. You don't really need to know that, but again, if you want to impress your grandma, if it says lutz in the corner where the elements are announced, you could be like, oh, that wasn't a great lutz, and your grandma's gonna be so proud.
So if we want to talk about what's the hardest jump, we talked about the quad axel. That's the hardest jump, like no joke, to the point where like no one can do it. Yuzuru Hanyu sort of do it. And when we say sort of do it, we mean that I'm trying to think of exactly what the case was with the quad axel that he landed. Like he kept it on its feet. He didn't fall. He got it most of the way around. And it wasn't great in a lot of ways, but it wasn't a total disaster and no one died. So
no one died. Welcome to figure skating. No one died.
Ideally. So that's what one day I'll tell you the story about how I actually watched a man die while skating on my 13th birthday.
Oh god, no.
So okay. Quad axel is the hardest jump. But what's the hardest jump that most people are gonna do? Well, that's really subjective, but in terms of what has the highest amount of points you can get from it, that's what we'll go off. That would be the quad lutz. However, the quad loop, despite being worth a little bit less, is like rarer, like fewer people have one. So it's very much like, what does a skater find easy or hard? And as we said before, a lot of skaters are fine with quads and hate the axel because it's just a totally different vibe. So Netta, what is it all about when skaters do a whole bunch of jumps right in a row?
Well, that's a combination jump, and you're required to have a bunch of those in both your short and your free skate. In the short program, you have three jumping passes, and one of them has to be a combination, which means that if someone starts with just one jump, you have to be like, oh shit, they have to remember that the next one needs to be a combination. And sometimes people have to do like this little half jumpy turn. It's because they're allowed to, as part of the combination, to reposition themselves to get to the correct takeoff for the following jump. And that's just a harder skill. Whereas sometimes it's very, very hard to like get one jump to rotate four times or whatever. Having the momentum and the speed to be able to do two or three of them in a row is a different skill that gets judged as well.
Yeah, so if you ever see a skater look like they tripped between two jumps, like maybe they did, but a lot of the, you know, eventually it's like, why are they all doing that? And that's, it's part of it. You just have to get your feet in a different position for the second jump, and that's what that is. So I want to talk a little bit about what makes a jump good, like what you can look for. And again, like if we sound like really jaded about scoring, it's because we are. And we will talk a little bit more about why in a little while. But in an ideal world where everything is judged according to like what actually makes it good and nobody is swayed by bias, what makes a jump good? In theory, what is it supposed to be judged on? So like one, as Netta was saying, like, did the jump take off from the right edge? Like, if you said you're doing a Lutz, was it a Lutz? You can tell the judges you're going to do something and then change your mind, but it has to be, like, intentional. I can't be like, I did a Lutz and then, oh, no, just kidding, it was a flip because it just happened to be bad and look more like a flip than a Lutz. Yep. It has to be deliberate. So you'll get called on, like, were your edges deep enough, as in, were you leaning the right way or whatever? That's part of it. Did you rotate all the rotations in the air, or did you like pre-rotate, which is a thing you might hear, where you kind of start rotating on the ice a little bit and then you go into the air? And everyone does that a tiny bit. It's just kind of part of it. But a lot of people do it more than other people. And some people get called on it and some people don't. You will also hear things like under-rotated or landed on the quarter. And that means that you landed it before you were totally done rotating. And then you kind of like finished it on the ice. So that's like another thing that will get you little deductions. You want to have a good running edge, which is like when you land on a jump, you want to then have enough momentum and enough like correct angle of landing to then be like able to just continue skating on your landing foot with your other foot out on just like a lovely long edge and not do a ton of like turns to stay upright or like flip and
or just
trip
like fighting for your life as you're landing. Because that's possible. You could have a very, very, very good jump, which looks great in the air, and then just come crashing down at the last second as well.
Right. Like it's kind of complicated to explain, but it's literally like the easiest thing to spot is like whether somebody had a good landing or not. And sometimes they'll cover it by like adding a bunch of turns, and it's like you're not, we saw what you did, you know. Overall effortlessness, lightness, like are you hammering your toe pick into the ice with the force of 1,000 Thors, or like are you just like boop, like just a little pick, like that's preferable. You just want it to look easy. You don't want it to look like you're fighting for your life, like Netta said. Yeah. And also like air position, there's like a proper way to hold your body in the air, and they judge you on whether you're doing that or whether your form is bad, and they give you a little extra points if you get your arms up in the air or one arm or both, whatever. It is like a personal pet peeve of ours on this podcast that some people will put both their arms up in the air on every single jump, at which point it feels like it's kind of not special. It kind of just feels like that's the way you know how to jump and you're getting extra points. But like,
yeah,
I would like to see you try it a different way, you know? But that's just us. It gets you extra points if you can jump with your arms in the air.
And it's impressive when you can do both. But if you only do one of them, it's as if Christina Aguilera only ever sung in riffs and nothing else. Megan, what happens if you do end up fighting for your life and you do end up like falling? You didn't pop. It's just bad. You come crashing down. Is your life over?
No, not to the degree that it used to be. The scoring system has changed over the years. For most of figure skating's life as a popular Olympic sport, it was judged on a 6.0 system. It's not anymore. And during the 6.0 days, if you fell, it was a huge bad problem for you. And now it's not as much. A lot of people that are like my mom's age will say like, I can't watch skating because when they fall, I get so upset. And it's like, it is disappointing and it is potentially dangerous, but you can fall and still win. And it happens all the time. Yep. So it's not heartbreaking. It's not career ending. And the reason is because, well, first of all, what is a fall? It sounds silly to be like, what is a fall? But in terms of how they decide whether you fell or not, because believe it or not, sometimes it's sort of questionable. It's whether the majority of your weight is supported by something other than your ice skates. So like your hand, your butt, your elbow, ideally not your head. A fall is an automatic minus 1 point. And probably if you fell, your jump was like somehow off, because if you have perfect technique, you should theoretically then land the jump perfectly. So you get the negative 1 point automatically and also deductions for whatever the fuck was wrong with your technique that caused the fall. But a fall on a really, really difficult jump will almost always get you some net positive partial credit. And that has to do with the way that jumps are assigned base value. And like, it's just really hard to lose all the base value. falling a bunch is really bad, but you could fall once and still have more points than somebody else.
But jumps, like we said, are not the only thing that happens in a figure skating program, ideally.
Yeah, Netta, talk to me about spins.
Spins! Well, spins are easier to conceptualize because it's literally just, if you imagine the top of a music box with like an ice skater on it, that's what a spin is. But there is three kinds of them. There are sit spins, which are essentially when you're squatting down, when your butt is closer to the ice, when you're like leaning into the ice. There is several different variations, and you're gonna hear the term spin variations used because there is just different ways to achieve the same base positions. The second one is camel, which is when you have one of your legs kind of out at like a 90 degree angle. And then you have upright, which as advertised is when your body is upright and is kind of going straight up and down. People do flying entries, which is when you just kind of jump into a spin. You kind of like launch yourself into it. You're going to recognize it when you see it. It's not like an actual jump. It doesn't get scored as a jump. It just adds to the difficulty of your spin. And also people have to do combination spins, which is when you mix and match all of the different variations we just kind of described. Those are mandatory. You have to have combinations. And to get just a little more nitpicky, you have to hold every single position in your combo spin for a certain amount of rotations for it to count. So you can't just be like flailing your arms and legs and being like, those are all different positions, give me points. And good spins are just fast and you do a lot of rotations and you don't travel. Traveling, you're gonna hear commentators being like, oh, she traveled so much in that spin. That is when the spin looks like an old school telephone wire and it doesn't stay in one spot. If your spin is centered, it stays in one spot to the best of your ability. There is always going to be a tiny bit of travel just because of physics, but you don't want it to like start in one end of the rink and end up like 15 feet away. Like, that's not a good spin.
If you can spot it with the naked eye, it's probably too much.
Yeah, if someone looks like they're unraveling as they gather more and more speed into their spin, they're having a hard time. And it's all about edges. Everything about good figure skating is about centering on your good edges.
The next element is the step sequence. It's kind of my favorite, even though a lot of people have it as their least favorite, but I'm not like other girls. It's basically just footwork. It's like the closest thing to what we were saying earlier that originally figure skating was. It's about figures. It's about fancy footwork. The one rule with a step sequence is like start at one end of the rink, end up at the other, do as many complicated connected steps as possible. And the reason I really like it is because it's a chance for the skaters to really get into the music and like emote and really show off how connected they are to the program. And it's pretty hard to fuck up. Like, you will maybe see someone trip and fall, but it's basically just a matter of how difficult are the steps you're doing.
Yeah.
We're not going to get into like, what are the different steps? Because like, literally, unless you yourself are learning them, you will never need to know them. Like, they're not going to come up.
Also, in the short program, you only get a step sequence. There is one more kind of sequence that we're about to discuss, but in your short program, you only get the step sequence. It's the way that you show off that you have everything that a skater needs to have in terms of a skill set, because some people are very, very good at jumping or very, very good at spinning, but you have to like kind of show the judges that you know how to connect those things as well. And then in the free skate, you also get a choreo sequence. Megan, what the fuck is a choreo sequence?
So in the free skate, you still do a step sequence and also you get a choreo sequence. And it's kind of similar. It's another moment where you're not jumping, you're not spinning, you are moving around the ice. Well, it's the most up for interpretation, I think, of all of the like required elements.
It's literally the interpretive dance portion.
It is. It's the interpretive dance portion. Most people will put together a string of like choreographical elements that are kind of familiar, like spirals, which is when you skate on one foot and you stick your other leggy up really far and you just skate. You just skate and it's beautiful. And it doesn't require a ton of like intricate, tricky footwork. Most of the choreographical elements you're going to see require strength and musicality. It's like, how tight can you clench your butt for how long? How long can you hold this one thing without falling over? And then sometimes you'll see people get really creative with it. Nathan Chen, who is definitely a favorite to podium, if not win the men's event, does a lot of like contemporary hip hop type dancing. Like you'll see that in his free, which you don't see an awful lot. It's usually more in like the ballet style, but you can bring in any type of choreography you want. And if you're not like a typical ballet, if you're not like other girls, then yeah, you can kind of bring in whatever you want. And you do see more and more like modern dance styles coming in.
You can conceptualize the choreo sequence as kind of like where those incredibly like well-trained athletes get to show off their party tricks, because that's where you can put in just any cool thing that you are capable of doing, basically.
It's true. It's like the show-off section. It's like the part of the song where like the singer just gets to riff and like make it their own. Yeah.
Yes. So that's it. That's what makes a program happen. And then, of course, we're kind of talking about it as if figure skaters are just kind of dreaming it up. We should probably mention that on this level, like the Olympic level, all of them work with whole teams of people who like make the programs exist, from like different kinds of coaches who specialize in only jumps or only spins or whatever. And also all of them work with choreographers.
When I was a little kid, I used to think that every skater went to every competition and had to do a completely new set of programs every time. God. And like, that's that just completely terrible. Not true. Basically, you'll have like typically one short and one long for a season, which is like a year. Sometimes people keep things for multiple seasons. You actually are seeing a lot more of that now because of COVID. We've been getting a lot of truncated seasons where people didn't really get their money's worth out of a program, and they want to keep using it because it's, you know, they liked it and they only got to skate it once, and then every other event was canceled, basically. You can change programs mid-season, but it's expensive to get a new costume and new choreography and everything.
But basically, it's good to remember that on this level, on the Olympic level, it's never a matter of like the skater just like showed up at 4 a.m. at the rink and just like dreamt up a program. It's a lot of people have very specific talents to make those programs happen.
In summary, basically, a skater is going to have come to the Olympics with two programs prepared, a short program that is 2 minutes and 40 seconds, and a free skate, which is 4 minutes, and which they will only get to do if they did sufficiently well in the short. And in each program, you need to have jumps, spins, and a step sequence. And additionally, in the free, you need to have a choreo sequence. That's skating in its most basic form.
Congratulations, you now know figure skating. We are going to go into more details about exactly what happens at the Olympics and what will happen at this particular Olympics in the next little section of this, which will be on your podcasting apps very, very soon, right?
Yeah. And we're also going to attempt to talk about how scoring works, which is something that if you are a regular listener, we actually grapple with all the time.
Yeah. So you're gonna find out a lot more. But in the meantime, I invite you to practice your newfound knowledge. Go into YouTube, just type in figure skating and just watch the first program it gives you and try to figure out if you can see a little bit more than you used to. Megan, where are you on the internet?
On the internet, I am on Twitter at Megan Kelleher 3. That's MEGHANKELLEHER 3. And I am also on another podcast called Eclipse, which is a Dungeons and Dragons podcast. So if you're into that, it's at Eclipse Pod on Twitter. Netta, where are you?
You can find me at Netta Marie on Twitter and Instagram. That's N-E-D-A. Then just Marie, like any basic Marie that you know. And you can find both of us over on Twitter at IcedyPod. You can let us know if you enjoyed this. And if you super, super enjoyed it already, you can also find us on Patreon. And that's patreon.com/IcedyPod if you want to support what we do here.
Yeah, you can also leave us a one-time tip at buymeacoffee. That's buymeacoff.ee/IcedyPod if you just want to say, hey, thanks for explaining to me what the fuck a Lutz is. Here's a dollar
for $1 name a Lutz.
For $1 name a jump.
And on that note, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you've enjoyed yourselves and I hope you learned something, and we'll be back so very soon with even more of this.
Hell yeah. All right, we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Love you. Bye.